Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Thursday afternoon. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I was talking earlier with Bill and Wendy about that study from CompareCards.com. It says 62% of parents went into debt funding their kids' sports activities or music classes or things like that with the idea that it would one day pay off for them. Well, of course, it pays off for very few, but parents are more than willing to spend money, in many cases monies they don't have, in order to send their kids to a sports camp. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But you heard Eric say scooters are coming to Chicago. The city has announced a pilot program. We've talked a lot about electric scooters on this show, and they soon will come to the west side, the northwest side, and the southwest side of Chicago, beginning in June through October, for an experiment. That's something we've talked with Ian Scherer about. He's a senior editor at CNET.com, and he joins us now on the Biz Lunch. Ian, welcome back.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, so the Scourge has made it to Lake Michigan.
The Scourge on two wheels, but oddly enough, not in the loop, which I'm surprised by.
Yeah, they're going to keep it out of the loop, Ian, and they're having pretty strict restrictions. Could be up to 35 scooters in these neighborhoods, but they have to be parked in certain areas. They can't block certain areas, and according to the program, vendors have 2 hours to locate offending scooters and move them.
Right, which shouldn't be a problem because every scooter is GPS located.
Right, but I love the way you said, you just said, yeah, like, right, like that's going to happen.
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, these companies, one of the interesting things, I think, is that these companies followed the Uber and Lyft model of basically, you know, ignoring the rules of the cities and doing whatever they wanted and hoping that it all works out. And it didn't work out as well for the scooter companies. You saw cities like Austin and San Francisco and New York really clamped down on them. And, you know, even now, I mean, these companies have been around for a while, but only now Chicago is getting into it. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not, you know, you guys kind of pick it up and find it interesting. But, you know, I also find it interesting there's a minimum of 2,500 scooters involved in this test and 3,500 scooters in the pilot area. And they haven't picked their vendors yet, but you know, there are a lot of companies to choose from, so it'll be interesting to see.
Well, so do you think that the city, by sort of waiting, will have benefited from what they've seen elsewhere?
I mean, the one thing I would hope, and I don't know how it's playing out in Illinois, but the biggest problem we've had in California is that these scooter companies are fighting helmet laws. And the reason that this matters is that the CDC literally just yesterday came out with a report that found that 45% of the injuries that happen on scooters are head trauma. And the number one reason is that people are not wearing their helmets. And these companies fighting those helmet laws, to me, is near criminal. You know, you've got thousands of injuries that CNET, we've actually spoken to emergency rooms across the country, and there are just, you know, an unbelievably high number of injuries that are happening on these scooters. And a lot of it is from people not being careful around cars, especially not knowing how to ride these scooters because there's no training beforehand. So I think these companies need to do a lot of work before they're really going to be, you know, good modes of transportation that are safe for everyone.
Well, I can understand. I'm not going to defend the companies for fighting helmets, but if you're a company, you're certainly not going to have shared helmets, right? No, I don't want to share a helmet.
No, someone had it before I don't me. Want to get lice.
And you're going to lose, but you're going to lose business if you're only going to rent to people who have helmets.
Well, that's part of the problem, right? But I mean, you know, at one point, these people decided to do this business. I think it's kind of, you know, to me, it's almost like trying to fight a seatbelt law. Like, it's just common sense that if you see data coming out like this, these number of people are getting head traumas, that, you know, you might as well just fix this, right? And there are ways that you can do it. You can spot check some people, make sure that they are wearing helmets. You know, they have employees in every one of these cities whose job is to manage the fleet. You know, when they're not managing the fleet, they can be spot checking people. Like, there are ways to deal with this to make sure that people know they've got to follow these rules.
I don't know what the law is in California, Ian, but you don't have to wear a helmet to ride a motorcycle in Illinois.
And that's scary to me, right? Because I just looking at it from my perspective and all of the stories we've written about on CNET about these scooters, it's so sad to hear about the people's lives who are turned upside down because they were going 15 miles an hour down a road, didn't know what they were doing, got in a crash, and suddenly their lives are upside down. And that's really terrible for them. And they should at least know what they're getting into before they do that.
All right. I'm sure we will continue to talk about this for a long time throughout the summer. But
yes.
The city announcing it today. Hey, what's this memo or this blog post from Microsoft saying that renewable or changing passwords every 6 weeks doesn't work? I hate changing my password.
Doesn't everybody, right? There are a few people I've met since I've written this story who aren't in corporate environments. And they're like, really? You have to do this? So for those of you who have never dealt with it, there are a lot of bad IT people who have rules that make it you have to change your password every 90 days or 6 weeks
you
or whatever.
Get that, there's nothing worse than getting that notification saying your password expires soon. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I actually used to work in the defense industry, right? I was an IT person for a Pentagon contractor. And I would run across people who would keep their passwords literally written on a sticky note underneath their keyboard because they had to change it so often. And it's just like, I'm thinking, my God, nascent secrets are literally in a password underneath the keyboard.
Okay, so put some meat on this, though. What is it that Microsoft is saying? And are they there? Because it's Windows. Windows forces us to change our passwords in many cases.
Yes.
Are they changing their requirements?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is that Microsoft has a set of defaults that they recommend to the people who run all these services, right? And what they said is that they're going to change what they call their baseline defaults, and they're going to remove this requirement that we have automatic changing passwords. That means they're not doing the humane thing, which is removing the feature altogether. They're just stopping it from being a default. And they're telling the companies who use this, look, this isn't secure. There's no data that says it's good. The Federal Trade Commission and the National Institute of Standards and Technology say it's a bad idea. You know, Microsoft recommends that people do stuff like dual factor authentication, which is where you get a text message code or something in addition to your password.
And I don't mind that at all.
Also,
I don't mind that at all.
And we have that over at CNET. I really like it. And then one of the other things is that, you know, we at CNET really recommend password managers. So you have a different password everywhere you go, but it's easy to manage. But all of that stuff is where Microsoft's pushing people. They're saying, look, this just doesn't work very well. We're going to leave it because people use it.
Right.
But, you know, eventually, hopefully everyone will see the light.
I want to speak directly now to the IT department at Tribune Media. I will record this and send it to you via email later this afternoon, and then we'll be cleared of that scourge. Ian Scherer,
yes, hopefully.
A senior editor at CNET. Thanks for joining us today, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. Bill Geiger, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be here, sir. How about you?
Everything's good. We're looking toward retirement, watching the S&Ps having a great start. I think, the best start in decades, start
yes,
of the year.
Yes, it has.
It ended the year not so well.
Not so well. That's why it had a great start in the first quarter.
It's easy to look
back.
Right, exactly. When you look good with a 5-game winning streak if you're coming off a 10-game losing streak.
That's right.
People come to you, though, to figure out where they're going to be for retirement and whether or not they're set and things like that, right?
Right, exactly.
You probably don't have a typical customer, but do you have a tip? Do customers have typical questions for you? I mean, is there a commonality there?
Actually, Steve, they boil down into about four big questions that, in one way, shape, or form, most of the time we're talking about. The first one is do I have enough to retire? Or a corollary of that is, how much is it going to take for me to retire?
Right.
How much am I going to have to retire?
How many of them come in and do have enough to retire?
Well, that's hard to tell in the first meeting.
He's got to answer the other questions.
He's got to answer the other question. How much income do you need? And do you have life? You have longevity in your family? All kinds of unique stuff. The second one, and we hear this a lot recently, is when can I retire? Particularly people who are thinking about retiring early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when should I take Social Security? How should I shift my portfolio around? At what point should I do that? The third question is, how much income can I count on during retirement? In other words, how well can I live? And that's really, really important.
Okay, and I brought this up with you before because you look at the models and they say things like 70 or 80% of your current... And every time I say it, your head starts shaking.
It's not true.
Your head starts shaking.
It's not true.
You're saying going in, you need to plan on 100%.
Yeah, and people have this idea because they're not working, somehow they're going to save money. You know, you won't do as much dry cleaning. Maybe you don't drive as much. I don't know. But you're going to be traveling. Because now you have the time. Well, travel's expensive.
I mean, that's the point of trying to retire early, right? Is to do that extra stuff you haven't been able to do.
Is to do the extra stuff. You're gonna be spoiling the grandkids. Your expenses really don't go down when you retire. They keep on going the way they are.
So when we talk about how much income should you count on, you should count on, or you should at least plan on, retiring and having income coming in equal to what you're retiring at.
If not, just a little bit more, Steve. And that's a really critical, important point. You want more income coming in retirement than you actually need. Because you take that income, you throw in a savings account. Then when you want to go on that trip to Florida or that cruise, it's real easy to give yourself permission to take that out of the savings.
So according to that model, if you've saved enough and you've set up your funds,
yes,
like we always talk about, so you've got guaranteed income.
Right.
And the income is coming in at a pace higher than what you're currently making or at what you're currently making.
Right. That's the ideal.
It pays to retire.
Amen.
Right? I mean, what's the sense in working other than for maybe mental health?
Well, if you really enjoy your job, keep working.
Right.
But if you're like most folks and you'd like to get out there and spread your wings and enjoy your retirement, the earlier you can do it and afford to do it, the better, because you're just going to have that much more time to live and to enjoy. The final question that people ask a lot is, will my money last?
Right.
You know, who's going to last longer, me or my money? And that's a real critical thing to find out.
When you set up a plan... So you're relying on income coming in, right?
Right.
So if you're at the end of the income or the retirement plan, there must still be a chunk of change sitting there because it's creating income for you.
Well, you've got money creating income for you. You've got money creating growth for you. There's two big sides to a good retirement plan. You need income to live your life, to protect your lifestyle, and you need growth,
right,
to stay up with inflation over time.
You mentioned earlier about longevity and how that would have an impact on your plan.
Oh, sure.
Is that true? I mean, so if you look and say that, you know, my grandparents lived to 95 and their grandparents lived to 95, I should plan on
longer retirement. You better figure on living to 95, right, or maybe even longer.
So if my family all died at 57, that means I should retire early.
Not necessarily, because medical care is so much greater today than what it was,
right,
in the past. Anyhow, Steve, these are the kind of like the four big questions that you want to figure out. You want to figure out when you can retire, can you afford to retire, how much income can you have to live on, and will your money last?
Are these knowable questions? Maybe not easily answered, but they are answerable.
That's what we do in our planning process. We sit down, we look, and we talk to people, their specific situations, and we help them answer those questions. And I know you're going to talk about this in just a moment, Steve. The next five callers who call in with at least a $500,000 portfolio, we're going to sit down with them personally on a complimentary basis and help them answer these questions.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Good to see you, sir.
See you in a week or so. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on Chicago's very own 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, it's T-ball season. Not really. It's snowing out still, but it's sort of T-ball season. When your little one lines up at the tee, are you thinking that maybe he or she will be playing Major League Baseball one day, that the investment in those T-ball classes will pay off in big bucks down the road? There was a study done by CompareCards.com, and they said 8 in 10 parents think that the money they spend on their kids' sports lessons or music lessons will have a chance to help them cash in financially a little bit later on in life. And the fact is that a lot of those parents are going into debt doing it. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But right now, you probably have heard a lot about Westlake Hospital in the past few weeks, a hospital that was purchased within the past year, the new owners moving to shut it down. And in fact, they were given approval earlier this week to do just that. One of the reporters covering that is Lisa Schenkner. She is writing for the Chicago Tribune, and she's on a phone line now. Lisa, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
All right, I want to start just with the Health Facilities and Services Review Board, because what an indistinguishable name, I guess. And it's one of those boards or one of those government functions that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with. What is it exactly that this board does?
Sure. Whenever a hospital wants to build like a new facility or make a significant addition to services or cut services or open or close, the board approves that.
And why is it that the state is in the business of approving hospital expansion or hospital closures?
I think it has to do, these laws are kind of controversial around the country, actually,
right.
But I think it has to do with trying to make sure that there are enough services out there to serve the residents of Illinois, and essentially that's the main function.
And so you might have a hospital that's doing really well and wants to add on and get bigger, and this board might actually tell them they can't do it because it would hurt neighboring hospitals who service other communities, right?
Yeah, that's something that they
it's just one of those weird sort of quirky things that I didn't think much about until I started following, it wasn't this story, but a story a few years ago. You just don't think of the state sort of even regulating advancement in hospital care, but they do. And that's how this company Pipeline goes to the board, right? They want to close Westlake Hospital. Cook County judge earlier had said, well, the hospital can't close until this board considers the case. The board considered the case, and what did they decide to do?
They approved the application to close the hospital.
So the hospital is going to shut down?
Right now, they have approval from the board. The Village of Melrose Park is still fighting to keep the hospital open, so I expect more things to be filed in court in the coming weeks to try to do that, but at this point, they have to go ahead to close the hospital.
Was there a court hearing earlier this week on this?
Yes, there was a court hearing yesterday on whether there should be an injunction issued to keep the hospital from closing, but the judge yesterday said no, she wasn't going to issue an injunction now that the board had already ruled.
Oh, so Melrose Park can sue, right? And they are suing, but that's probably not. I think I read in your story even that the Melrose Park suit isn't fighting over keeping the hospital open. They're just fighting over the circumstances under which Pipeline was allowed to buy the hospital.
Right. They're saying that they're accusing Pipeline of lying about their intention to close the hospital so that they wouldn't face opposition when they were getting approval to buy it from the state board.
So they had to go to this sort of weird state board and ask permission to buy the hospital. When they did, if they went to the board and said, yeah, and we're buying other hospitals nearby, so we're going to shut this one down, the chances that they would be given approval were slimmer, correct?
That's what Melrose Park is saying. Because there were you can have public hearings when you're seeking approval to buy a hospital, and I think Melrose Park is alleging that they didn't want to reveal that they were really going to close the hospital because then the community might have come out and opposed it and it might have had more trouble.
And Pipeline said that they didn't know how bad a shape this hospital was when they bought it?
That is what they are claiming.
That's a little hard to believe, isn't it?
That's something that Melrose Park is saying as well. They're saying, we don't believe that you didn't know this. One of Pipeline's leaders said in court that they realized in December that Westlake wasn't going to be sustainable, and they officially bought the hospital in January.
So they bought the hospital last January, and they said it took them 11 months or 12 months, and they realized that it wasn't going to work.
He said in court that they realized the month before they bought it that it wasn't going to be sustainable.
Yeah, see, okay, so you can take them at their word or not. It just seems difficult to believe that they would move into a purchase with the idea of keeping something open and then learn right before that it was going to close. Okay, so there's that. What's the future then for Westlake Hospital?
Well, right now it looks like they've gotten the green light to close, but Melrose Park is still fighting this. It looks like Melrose Park is going to challenge the board's decision. They're going to ask the courts to review this decision because they believe the decision wasn't made appropriately.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lisa, but so you write something, and the thing that jumped out about me, the story that you wrote, was a quote from Julie Hamis, the former lawmaker who now sits on this board, something I had not considered, but after she said it, it seems pretty clear. What this may be about more than anything is the future of the quote-unquote hospital in America. The need for hospitals in many ways are diminishing, right? The way we get our health care now is not as hospital-centered as it used to be.
Right. Outpatient care is much more common than it used to be, making inpatient care at hospitals less necessary.
I mean, I joked yesterday that hospital outbuildings now, like North Shore or whichever, are sort of the mattress stores of the 21st century. They're moving into any vacant storefront, it turns into a North Shore office or a Northwestern Medicine office, because they're now everywhere in the neighborhoods doing things that maybe used to be done in hospitals, and they're not being done in hospitals anymore.
Yeah, that's a big push right now in healthcare, especially in the Chicago area. You're seeing a lot of hospitals pushing out into the communities, trying to provide outpatient care there.
So does that mean then that the loss of this hospital isn't as great as we might think because there are other facilities to take care of the people who live near it?
Well, that depends on which side you're on.
Yeah.
I think that's an ongoing tension in healthcare. People in communities never like to see their hospitals close, but at the same time, there are those that are saying, well, they're not serving, the need isn't there anymore, and it's time to move on to the next more efficient way or better way of serving patients.
Lisa Schenker is a writer for the Chicago Tribune. She's been covering Westlake Hospital. Thanks for joining us today, Lisa.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. In case you haven't heard of it, our own Amy Guth has been hosting the daily podcast, The Crane's Daily Gist. And yesterday, Amy helped Mayor Rahm Emanuel wrap up his tenure as mayor of Chicago, and he shared many of his thoughts on how to help further business aspirations in the schooling system in the city. One of the legacies he'll leave with is the corporate relocation work he's done and how it's helped push Chicago on the global business map. You can check it out at WGNplus.com and Crane's. And another prominent figure in the city thinks Chicago is worth betting on too. Ken Griffin explained that the Milken Institute Global Conference that ended yesterday, he wants to help fix Chicago and make it better. He shared during his speaker panel, quote, "We're going to stand and fight for the policies and changes that will make this state better." This is after a buzz that his hedge fund Citadel was going to move to New York, but it sounds like he's here to stay. So buckle up, boys and girls, we're making this place better, one step at a time. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, so my kids, one's out of college, the other is a junior in college. So the era, the days of spending money on their dance classes or their gymnastics classes, those are behind me. But I know for a lot of parents or grandparents, they see their kids out there taking, it's not enough just to go to the Park District Baseball League, but you've got to go to a batting clinic where you're paying money, or you go to a fielding clinic. You need a batting, not a glove, but a sleeve, all of this stuff. People spend more and more money. Matt Schultz is already laughing, I think, an industry analyst at comparecards.com, all with, I guess, the idea that your kids are going to cash in on it one day down the road. Matt, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
How about that? I mean, are we spending, well, it looks like we're spending way too much money on or banking on our kids becoming star athletes one day.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. We found that about 8 in 10 parents think that their kids' competitive activity that they're doing could lead to income one day for the kid. And the more the parents spend, the more likely they are to believe that. So there's an awful lot of parents with big dreams for their kids who are spending a whole lot of money to try and make that happen.
So the 8 in 10, the 80% of parents, are they saying that if their child is playing baseball, that they are going to one day be a Major League Baseball player? Or are they saying that, well, the teamwork that he learns, the lessons he learns on being a team might pay off for him down the road? You know, you understand my distinction.
Sure. Yeah. We didn't ask specifically if they thought that the person was going to be the next Chris Bryant, or if they would just make a little money on the side doing something.
Right.
But it's clear that either way, they clearly see that making some sort of income is a possibility.
And you mentioned the fact that, right, the more money they spend, the more likely they are to believe. I guess that follows. If you're more convinced that it's going to pay off down the road, you're more inclined to spend more money.
Yeah, we all rationalize a little bit, and I think that's a little bit of what's going on there. And we found that 62% of people say that they've been in debt for their kids' activities before, and one in three are currently paying off debts. So it's a tough situation.
That's just shocking to me, and shocking is maybe the wrong word, but I don't understand how you. I mean. Frankly, you know, I grew up in an area, or my kids grew up in an area where there's, you know, great competition with sports and you know, keeping up with the Joneses and all of that stuff. And I understand why you want to introduce your kids to new experiences. You know, maybe they will discover that ballet is all for them. So you have an introductory to ballet class or things like that. But those are just to get tastes, I think. The idea of going into debt to do it is, well, I mean, you know, you're calling from a comparecards.com. It's fiscally risky.
Yeah, no question. And to a degree,
risky is a generous term, I think.
Yeah, and to a degree, people are missing a bit of a teachable moment in here too, because you can learn a little bit about your kid and have them learn a little bit about themselves by having a conversation where you say, "Look, honey, this instrument or this select league is really expensive. We can't really afford it, but if you wanted to maybe do something to help where you're walking a dog or something along those lines to try and make a little extra money, you can see kind of the depth of some of their passions through conversations like that and teach them a little bit too.
And what are we talking mostly about sports, or is this music and other things too?
You know, we asked about everything from sports to music to cheerleading to debate team to beauty pageants. So and across the board, the belief was pretty high that those activities might lead to income someday.
Wow, and so this probably is more about the parents than the kids, right?
Yeah, a lot of it is, and I mean you always hear the talk about, you know, the parents living their dreams through their kids,
right,
and that sort of thing. But the truth is that while it's noble to help your kid pursue their dream, you have to make sure that you're not doing so at the expense of your own dreams of financial stability and things like retirement.
Forget about teaching a kid how to hit a baseball. Teach him how to manage a bank account and spend money wisely.
Yeah.
Matt Schultz is the chief industry analyst at comparecards.com. Okay, Matt, go spend money on a hitting clinic, will you?
My kid's a soccer kid, so it'll probably be somewhere in that area, but I'm right in it.